Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the April 19th, 2016 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I wonder if you'd stand with me while we recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Can we have a roll call, please?
Ms. Kiefer? Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey? Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
I'm here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
I am here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
With 12 members present?
Mr. Morey is expected. A couple housekeeping things I forgot. If you have cell phones or electronic devices, please silence them. And that means legislators as well. Speaking of which, even if it's a pretty little tune, we'd like it silenced. The fire exits are to my right in the back of the room and to my left in the front of the room. If there should be a fire, please don't use the elevator. Presentations of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I don't think we're going to have an executive session tonight. Unless you want one, Leslie.
Not at all.
Thank you. All right, I think we'll move right to privilege of floor for the public. This is the public's opportunity to speak to us about any topic for up to 3 minutes. We do have a time clock, which we keep it at the end of the 3 minutes. There'll be an audible signal. And we ask that if you're speaking, you please conclude at that point. By signing a blue card, which is required in order to speak tonight, there in the back of the room, if anyone wants to speak and hasn't signed one, you're agreeing to the following rules. You're agreeing to a three-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring of time to another person is not permitted. You agree that if you cause disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. I have four cards at this point, unless there's other ones that need to be handed up. First one I have tonight is Joe Wilson, and after that, Rebecca Elgee.
Good evening. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm Joe Wilson, and I live in the town of Dryden. I'm here first to congratulate you on concluding the Energy Roadmap process. Obviously, lots of thought, lots of energy, lots of different opinions went into the plan and a lot of hard work by the staff. So thank you to the staff. Thank you to all of you for thinking hard about the most challenging thing we have facing us, which is global warming and climate change. What I'd like to suggest to you are the following ideas. I know that next comes the action plan that follows on the energy roadmap with its goals and a few suggested strategies. But I would suggest to you, and I suspect you actually already know, that planning boards and town boards throughout the county are making decisions now that are impacting the possibility of us achieving the goals that are in the energy plan, or in fact carrying out many of the strategies which are there. I have had the pleasure and the interesting experience of going to a number of town board meetings in the last couple of months and planning board meetings occasionally, where energy issues come to the fore or they're ignored. And it's become my hypothesis, my opinion, that town boards and planning boards don't fully understand both what their tasks, obligations, rights, and duties are under SEACER with regard to the SEACER policies for energy reduction, energy use reduction, and greenhouse gas emissions reduction. It's also my thought that they, and maybe you, don't yet recognize how complementary what's in the energy roadmap complements the SEACER policies on energy use reduction and greenhouse gas emission reduction. As a result, I'm going to suggest to you that you either sponsor or staff, but in any case, bring the planning boards and the town boards to a program or a symposium where the complementary features of the energy roadmap and the SEACER policies are brought to the fore for these people who are working hard to do the right thing for our towns and for the county as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca Elgee, please. And Irene Weiser.
Good evening. I'm Rebecca Elgee. I live in the city of Ithaca. And I wanted to talk with you tonight about a film documentary that we're bringing to town called Fix It. You should have one of these invitations in your mailbox. And I hope as many of you as possible can come to this viewing of the film, followed by a panel discussion from various perspectives. And the film is produced and evolved from a small business owner of who owns a framing company in Pennsylvania, who, when he tried to see how he could lower his business costs, started to see what the big factors were that kept raising his expenses. And lo and behold, healthcare was out on top. And so he then decided to try to do something to change this and develop this documentary, interviewed people in the U.S., doctors, businesses, and also went to Canada to interview people. So it comes from a variety of perspectives, but is stressing the business perspective. And so we have a number of people coming from various points of view, including Don Barber, who will talk about the consortium and what Tompkins County's been doing. And also Annette Gaudino, who is the New York Health Campaign coordinator from New York City. And she's actually going to be here for a couple of days, Monday and Tuesday. And I would like to set up some meetings with people locally with her to talk about the New York Health Campaign to get Dick Gottfried's bill passed. And I know you passed a resolution endorsing the bill. That's part of what she's worked on around the state. And she'd like to meet with legislators to see where we can go from here. She's also working very hard with labor representatives and small businesses. So we're actually having a meeting Tuesday, the 26th, at 10:30 in the morning, I think at the Workers' Center, because we want to use some of the Workers' Center people to see if they're more involved to tie it to the Fight for 15 and the immigrant issue. So if you can come then, that would be great. If not, let me know if you're interested, and we'll have some flex time that we could meet individually or in small groups. Again, my name's Rebecca Elgee. I didn't put my contact information on here. I think most of you know it. But if not, you can get in touch with me.
Thank you.
Could I ask?
Yes, Margaret.
Rebecca, you said you're not sure if it's going to be at the Worker Center, that meeting on that Tuesday?
Tentatively, that's where it's set up.
Okay, if you
please,
could.
Please use the microphone.
Yes, that's where it's set up.
I guess just if you could send the legislature clerk a confirmation so she can get that to us once it's.
Okay. Who should I send it to?
Kathy Covert.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
And I'll also send my contact information.
Thank you. Irene Weiser.
Hi. Thanks, Irene Weiser. I'm a resident in the town of Caroline. And there was recently an article in the Ithaca Journal by Mr. Kassler about the roadmap that you guys will be accepting or voting on tonight. And I was quoted in there, and I wanted to let you know that, and, you know, no fault to Mr. Kassler or the Ithaca Journal, but I was quoted for only part of the views that I expressed, and I thought it was important for you to hear the rest of the views. The views that were in the Ithaca Journal probably don't surprise you. They said, do more. You know, we need to get to 100% by 2030, and that the goals aren't ambitious enough. But what I also did express to Mr. Kassler, and I wanted to express to all of you here tonight, is how very appreciative I am of, first of all, the vision that got us to doing this roadmap in the first place, but also the absolutely tremendous amount of work that went into it by many, many people, and as Joe Wilson expressed, a lot of feedback and differing views. Really just a phenomenal piece of work, and I really want to thank everybody that was involved with that, and encourage that you do accept and pass that tonight, and then quickly move beyond that to considering that before we set up the committee that will develop the strategic plan for how do we start reaching goals, that you revisit the goals, and strongly urge you to consider goals of 100% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. It's what the science supports. You know, we're leaders here. We are leaders in the state. Some of us have come to know that through the work on the Energy and Economic Development Task Force, that we're being recognized at state levels for some of the innovative work that's happening here. And I'd love to see us lead on this, too. So thank you.
Thank you, Irene. Paul Rossi.
Thank you. I'm here representing the Ithaca Board of Realtors. I just wanted to invite everyone in the room to an event this Thursday, the 21st. It's at the Ramada Inn on Triphammer Road. It's smart growth for the 21st century. We'll be taking a look at housing, transportation, jobs, shopping, schools, and finding ways to support the local economy while protecting the environment. We do have a speaker that we've sponsored coming up from Texas who's been working on this most of her life. It's going to start at 3 p.m. on the 21st. It will go until 7, and it is open to the public. But, again, I wanted to make sure we invited you all to join us.
Thank you for the invitation. That was the last blue card I have. Is there anyone else that wants to hand up a card? Okay, then let's move on to privilege of the floor for elected officials. I see three out there, unless I'm missing some. I think Deborah Sepola-Dennis came in from the town of Dryden. Irene Weiser, of course, is here from town of Caroline. And then Duxon Nugent is here from the city of Ithaca. So who would like to go first? I think, Debbie, maybe start with you.
Hi there. Thanks, Mike. I just wanted to give a really quick update. Not a lot going on in Dryden right now. It's a little bit slow. We had two special use permits that we passed in March, and now we've gotten past those. So there's a few things going on, though. We did set a referendum for the purchase of the Pinckney land parcel. It's 15 acres of parkland, or it's land that we would turn into a park along Fall Creek, and the county has pledged $15,000 towards that purchase, so we're really hoping that we can get this referendum passed. We can get folks to vote for the purchase of this property so that we can move ahead with it. I think it'll be a good property for the town of Dryden to have and to offer to our residents. So that referendum will be on May 3rd. There are two polling places, the Varna Community Center, and the easiest way that I can reference who to vote, you can look this up on the town's website as well, but basically it's Martha's district votes at the Varna Community Center and Mike's district votes at the Dryden Fire Department. And the polls will open at noon and they close at 8 p.m. I also want to let you know that Greg Sloan has resigned his position on the Dryden Town Board as of April 30th. He's moving out of town, so he's resigned, and we will be considering appointments to that open slot in the next month or so. The Village of Dryden is working towards a revitalization project on Montgomery Park in Dryden and plans to hold a community work project in October. They're in sort of the planning and fundraising stage right now. They are hoping to install a new playground system similar to the one that was done in Varna last year. And then they'll be moving on. That'll be a phased revitalization throughout the next year or so. We're also going to be considering a resolution next week or this Thursday asking the county legislature to pass a local minimum wage law establishing the Tompkins County living wage as the minimum wage, which is currently $14.34 an hour. And just would like to support Joe's idea of having a workshop or some sort of program to look at the energy roadmap and talk about SEAKR. I think that that would be very valuable. I know I'd be very interested in something like that. And to actually have a little bit more information about the energy roadmap and how it applies to the towns. And I want to support what Irene was saying about going to 100% renewables by 2030. I think that that is a good goal for us. The science says that we are going to have a time period that we are not emitting greenhouse gas emissions for us to have actual an effect on climate change. So I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Irene, did you want to speak about the town or not?
Sure. This will be quick, and I'm speaking to you about a resolution that hopefully our clerk will be sending to you soon, but I do want to let you know that this past week the town of Caroline passed a resolution supporting the idea that the Public Service Commission should urge the utilities to look for alternatives to building out natural gas before they decide to do that. That they should encourage the utilities to look at alternatives like energy efficiency and alternative types of heating and demand response. So that was passed this past week in Caroline. And just so you guys know, there is a pipeline proposed in Caroline along with the pipeline that everyone is familiar with, and you know, we in the resolution address both of those pipelines. So anything else going on in Caroline? Still working to figure out what we're doing with an ambulance service, still hoping to figure out a way to get broadband service. Those are kind of our big issues.
Thank you. Duxon?
Hello. So if George didn't say this already, thanks for contributing to the Petcoff property to protect the Six Mile Creek watershed. We did our part earlier this month. Let's see. We're busy, but I don't think you care about most of it. So I guess incentive zoning, we're still discussing. We're trying to balance that. In particular, people were concerned about skipping site plan review, even when there's the proposal is one of the incentives would be to be able to skip site plan review if the area has design guidelines in place, since you know a big chunk of site plan review is indeed the design. So that's the most attractive of the incentives, but some of us are concerned about losing the public input that happens during site plan review, so We've directed staff to come up with maybe an expedited site plan review instead. We did not discuss CTAP. We, as in the planning committee, did not discuss CTAP this month. That's kicked off the next month. And we are probably mostly preoccupied with getting through the Chainworks environmental impact study, which is huge and has a lot of supporting documents. So that's been taking up my time lately. I think that's it.
Thank you. We really appreciate folks from the other municipalities coming in and speaking to us. Carol, did you want to ask a question?
Yeah, well, no, I just wanted to respond to Duxton. On the contrary, we're watching avidly what the city is doing with incentive zoning. We're particularly concerned, I think all of us here, in making sure there are housing options, and housing options at all levels of the spectrum. So thank you to you and others in the city for taking that on, finding ways to try to achieve it.
Martha?
Yeah, I had a question for Irene about broadband in the town. So what's up? It's like, is that one of these things we thought we'd fixed?
Yeah, it's definitely, it hasn't been good news for us. I presume you guys are aware that with the original grant that the state looked at Caroline and decided we just had too many hills and valleys and needed too many poles, and they said we're not paying for it. So we've been, we did some fundraising, we got raised some money. We thought that that was going to help to at least get partial installation in the town. But we've run into a variety of challenges, both in terms of locating the pole and the best location seems to be on land that has a conservation easement and the neighbor doesn't want to provide electric, and it's, you know, so that kind of mess for right now. And now the state has a new broadband initiative underway, lots of money, really, really high-speed fiber, but they're looking for more densely populated areas and not applying to, and so we kind of end up in this double jeopardy situation because we have some cable from Time Warner that disqualifies us from being a fully underserved. So it's we're kind of in limbo, and we're continuing to look. And thanks to Dave McKenna, and we're working with Mr. McKenna, and we're working with Clarity Connect, and just trying to figure out a way forward. We are really lucky, actually. I don't know if any of you met Gary Reinbolt, who was on the broadband committee and formerly with WSKG, who has lots of experience and understanding of telecommunications stuff. And he's now a board member in Caroline, so he's heading up that committee, and you know, we're doing what we can. But, you know, we're fighters out there. We'll come up with something. So thanks for the interest. Anything more? Or?
No, I just was looking for an update. Dave's smiling. I don't know if you have anything to add.
I spoke with Chuck yesterday, and he had spoken with Seward's office and updated them on the problem with Caroline. I know they were told previously, but apparently they didn't write it down or something. So anyway, they have it now, and they have said that they would support the project, but we need to get a definition of exactly what the project entails, and Chuck's told them it's going to be at least a month before he can get that done.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I think it was going to be longer than that, but he's. Oh, really?
Yes.
Chuck said a month as of yesterday?
As of yesterday. He said it's going to be at least a month.
Use your microphone, please, Dave.
He said it'll be at least a month before he can get to it. His staff is down about 30% because of some problems right now.
Okay.
So he's got some issues of his own to take care of.
Yeah, we were aware of that. We also knew that he was doing the build-out this summer, and so we thought that it was going to be much more prolonged before he could work up a plan with us. So
He's hoping to get it done within the next month, to probably 6 weeks, I would guess.
Okay, great. Thanks. It's good news.
Thank you.
Thanks again. Okay, let's move to privilege of the floor for legislators. Jim Dennis has his hand up.
Thank you, Michael. I want to acknowledge the passing of Stu Lewis, who is an entrepreneur in downtown Ithaca, son of Irv Lewis, who for many years operated what Stu called the Circle of Fashion in downtown Ithaca. There were four stores on the Commons, one in College Town, one up in the Northeast Trip Hammer Mall. And I could best characterize by Stu by saying how to succeed in business by working really hard. He was a very interesting character. I first got to know him when I was on the City Council in 1974, and the Commons was becoming built. And Stu was involved with Tony Egner, who was the architect, Tate Van Court, City Planning Director Ed Conley was the mayor, and Stu Stein also, who was very involved in the development of the Commons. And one was privileged as a young elected to be able to go to those meetings and listen to people who had pretty amazing ideas on what they thought the city of Ithaca should be and what it was they were hoping it to be, because essentially it had been devastated by urban renewal and instant urban renewal. Everything got torn down. There were sand lots everywhere, and it needed to get built back up. And people with a vision like Ed Conley, who was the then mayor, came in as a mayor, and all these other people, and especially Stu Lewis. One of the big issues was how are they going to pay for the Commons? Well, they came up with something called the Commons Benefit District. And what that meant was you got taxed on the sidewalk in front of your building. So, you know, people were not very happy with that. If you were a business person, that you're already paying property taxes. And Stu literally went door to door on the Commons all the time since he owned four buildings, or many more than four. So he was a big contributor to that. And that thing kind of got through and the Commons got built. He's an interesting person. He not only assisted business people downtown, but assisted people out of town. Those of you who will recognize the name Tommy Hilfiger, who is from Elmira, New York. In the 70s, Tommy ran a store called The People's Place, and it was a place where hippies went in Elmira. And Hilfiger, and I've actually had a conversation with him about this years and years ago, because I met him once on the Commons. Stu was nice enough to introduce me to him as he was just beginning his rise in the fashion industry. And so he and his brother would drive to New York City and bring all this stuff back. And it was a place to get bell-bottom pants and, you know, flowery upper blouses and flowery shirts and wild hats and all kinds of other things. And also army jackets, used army jackets, because that was the uniform in the 70s. And Stu helped Hilfiger get started, because the store went belly up over there in Elmira after 3 or 4 years, and he came over here, and Hilfiger was married to a person here who had relatives in Tompkins County, and he got to know Stu, and Stu literally helped him. I don't know financially, but he certainly helped him develop a business sense that was, as it turns out, Hilfiger, you know, everyone knows who he is. When my children were in high school, Will and Josh and Johnny Lewis all played lacrosse for Ithaca High School. So I spent a lot of time next to Stu at lacrosse games. My guys were the same year as his. And one story I remember vaguely, he would come to the lacrosse games, you know, dressed pretty well. He had great clothes. And so we would go to visiting games and stand together and talk and do whatever. Well, I was standing next to him in a game in Vestal, New York, and we got ordered out of the high school. I didn't, but he did. He kept yelling. He thought that we were getting a bad deal. We were winning the game, but we were getting a bad deal. And he just consistently yelled at the officials. And the guy said, you know, I want you out of here. And he points to me and said, you take him and take him out of here. And I just turned to him and said, Stu, why don't you just tell him you'll buy this place and get rid of everything. And so we had to leave the game. But that's kind of a memory I have of him. He was an amazing guy. I saw him many times in the past few years, either on the lake or in Trumansburg. He and his wife, Ruthie, would be there. And he was never shy to offer advice to be an elected official. And that was always great fun for me, because he had a perspective that few people had in the community. And he walked the walk, and he talked the talk, and made a great contribution to the city of Ithaca and Tompkins County as a whole. So rest in peace.
Thank you, Jim, for those very nice comments. Carol?
Yeah, I had also raised my hand to talk about Stu. It's hard to overstate. I mean, you really can't overstate how amazing this man was for small business in Ithaca and outside of Lansing as well. He had open stores. And the ways in which he mentored other business owners coming up. Jim said really most of what there was to say about the BID, the Business Improvement District. But, you know, imagine a business owner coming to other business owners and saying, we should be taxed. We should pay an additional tax. And getting the other business owners to sign on to that, at a time when downtowns were dying all over the place, and he found a way to work with the city and work with other business owners and rebuild downtown. And it meant a lot, and it meant a lot whether you were whatever perspective you came from, he would work with you. And you all know the perspectives I come from. So for me to be impressed with a business owner, that's how business owners should be in the community. I'll claim him as somebody who grew up in the Third Ward, I believe, at Bell Sherman Elementary School. And I just want to mention the farmers market, because he was an early and avid supporter of the farmers market. He personally funded those. For those of you who've been out on the dock at the farmers market, he thought there ought to be a link between those who come here and are out on the water, whether you're in a kayak or a big powerboat, or at least a mid-sized powerboat, and be able to tie up to the farmers market and shop and spread that good word. So he personally funded that dock and supported the farmers market. And then lastly, I'll just say the quality of the clothes that he brought to this place. You still see me today. I mean, those stores closed a long time ago, and you still see me today in some of those clothes. He'll really be missed. And the funeral and services are tomorrow. With the funeral at Temple Beth-El, and then a social, they're calling it a social hour at Lake Watch Inn, and that information is in the Ithaca Journal. I also just wanted to thank those who came tonight to speak to us and weigh in on the energy roadmap, healthcare, and Joe Wilson, is he still here, to thank him in particular, because I think that's a very good idea to look at what are the links and the ways in which town boards and town planning boards could be, and we all could be, learning to use SEAKER in a way that helps, starts to weigh in much more effectively than maybe we have in the past on energy choices and energy impacts. So I think it's a great idea, and I hope that we find ways, whether it's the towns themselves or with the county, there's lots of ways to approach that, and it's a great idea. So thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Carol, and for your comments to Martha Robertson.
I think Anna was next.
Yeah, I don't think you saw my hand.
I'm sorry, were you first?
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Go ahead, Anna.
And thank you both for those comments. I really appreciate them. Having grown up here, I'm very familiar with the family, so thank you. I also wanted to thank Joe Wilson for his idea. I think it's a great idea. I hope we can move forward with that. I think a lot of people, at least that I've talked to, are a bit befuddled about the different seeker categories and what they mean and how it applies to our energy roadmap. So I think that would be a wonderful seminar to have. I wanted to mention Friday, April 22nd, is Earth Day. I think that it is a wonderful it coincides wonderfully with the decisions that we're making tonight, and hopefully we can move forward in celebration with some positive voting today. And part of the celebration for Earth Day is a event at the Space, Green Stars the Space, on Saturday the 23rd from 12 to 3 p.m., and I invite everyone to be there. I will unfortunately be out of town. But I encourage everyone else in the legislature to go and in the community, and that is hosted by Sustainable Tompkins. And if anybody has been watching in the Ithaca Times, there's been a series of articles on the housing situation in our community in an attempt to bring stakeholders together from all the different arenas, from developers to legislators to common council representatives, community members. There's Paul Mazzarella from INHS also was an author of one of the articles to address this from different points of view. And this teach-in is a sort of a summary of that discussion to bring the community in to address our housing crisis and discuss how we can create equitable housing environment in not only Ithaca but the Tompkins County area. So I encourage everyone to go if they are available, and happy early Earth Day.
Give the time and place again.
That is 12 to 3 p.m. at Green Stars the Space, and that is Saturday the 23rd.
We have Martha, then Rich, then Leslie.
Well, I wasn't going to mention that, but I'm going to be part of the presentation on that on housing. I want to just point out that Irene is chair of TCOG, so I hope that idea about the planning boards and municipal boards will probably not have to go far to get onto a TCOG agenda. I think we're probably all getting more emails than about the elections than we want right now, and that'll be one relief about tomorrow, I suppose. By the way, just in case anybody out there hasn't voted, you have till 9 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock tonight. So just turn off our little meeting here and go vote. I got an email from the Progressive Turnout Project about, you know, New York, 3.2 million New Yorkers lose voting rights. So I read down, and I just had to ask Steve DeWitt, because it says millions of New Yorkers just discovered that their party affiliations were mysteriously switched without their consent, making them unable to vote in Tuesday's primary. Nearly 30% of registered New York voters are currently registered as unaffiliated, that's an actual term, with either party, and therefore ineligible to vote in Tuesday's primary. Many of these voters, most of whom are Democrats, claimed their party affiliation was changed without their consent. So Steve says, no, that's disingenuous. You know, if somebody's unaffiliated, you're unaffiliated. If you may sympathize with one party or another, you may be always vote with one party or another, but if your registration says unaffiliated, then you're not, according to the Board of Elections and New York State law, you're not a Democrat or a Republican or an Independence Party member or whatever it is. So, and I just want to say, when I was a college student in New York, I thought I'm independent. I'm not gonna register with any party. I'm gonna be unaffiliated. And then I realized, oh, I can't vote in the primary. And since I always voted with the Democrats anyway, I'm registered as a Democrat. So I think there are plenty of problems with access to voting, real problems with access to voting. I really wish people wouldn't make up stuff just to get you on the email list or just to get you to donate, because it's a party is a party. And if you don't want to, you know, if you want to be part of a primary election, you should register for that party. Now, many states do it that way. In fact, I think it used to be that all states did it that way, and it's sort of been a recent switch towards open primaries, which maybe it's because I've pretty much only ever voted in New York. I don't even understand why have parties if you're going to have open primaries, but that's just me. So, but that's New York law. It's entirely allowed, appropriate, correct, if that's the, you know, the way it is in New York. So I just want to say there are plenty of other things I don't like about New York voting law, like we don't have same-day registration, that you can't have access to an absentee ballot without pretending you're going to be out of town, whatever it is. But an open primary doesn't make any sense to me, and this kind of this email is really unfortunate.
Rich John.
I would just mention as a many years ago when I was a young person trying to make my way in the Ithaca business community, Stu Lewis went out of his way to be just very encouraging. He was a great guy. If we could all channel a little bit of Stu Lewis, that'd be a good thing. And I wanted to talk just for a minute about the energy roadmap. I intend to vote for it. I'm highly encouraged at the work the planning department has put into this, and it's a great step forward. And I want Tompkins County to be leaders. At the same time, I think we have to fully understand what a project this is. For example, I was just looking on the internet out in California. They built a 550-megawatt solar panel farm. It's about 9.5 square miles. And it cost $2.5 billion. This is a significant investment. Now, that powers about 160,000 homes, so it would be, you know, more than you'd probably need in Tompkins County, at least with present needs, but gives you some sense of the scale we're talking about to get there. And the lift we're going to have to do, not only in finding money to pay for a lot of these things and encouraging the private investment, but in public education and bringing everybody along, this is work. It's work we should be doing, and I'm happy to be involved in it, but let's not kid ourselves at all about what we're trying to do here. So all to the good, but keep our eyes open.
Leslie McBean Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Carol and Jim, for your kind memories, and Rich, of Stu Lewis. I've been in this community long enough that, you know, after a while you get to know people. I'm not from here, and he certainly is one of the people who I had the opportunity to meet when I got here, and quite a gentleman he was indeed. Speaking of gentlemen, you can count on me to bring the party, Martha. You were talking party. It was a good segue. On the 23rd, this coming Saturday, after you're done with the Earth Day celebration at the space, I invite you to go to Ultimate Athletics, which is in the mall up there in Lansing, for a boxing event. It's been a long time coming. My dear friend Frank Proto isn't here, but Frank and I were going to put on an exhibition match, and I'm not even attempting to take on Dan. So, Frank, I might take on.
Where do we get tickets?
It's $10 at the door. The Chet Cashman, another gentleman in this community who passed a few years ago. The boxing program at Chiac was named in Chet's honor, and after many, many years of being in hiatus, we're finally having a boxing classic this Saturday for starting at 4 p.m. at Ultimate Athletics Gym in the Ithaca Mall. about 14 bouts, amateur boxers coming from throughout our region, Geneva, Rochester, Syracuse, everywhere. GX Boxing Program has been known for many years for being a program that was more about mentorship and discipline than it was about just fighting, and we're very pleased to sort of showcase that again for people in that industry who are amateur boxers. So I invite all of you to please come out and enjoy the festivities. I also want to mention the first, because I think May 1st will happen before our next legislature meeting. It's Streets Alive in the downtown Ithaca area, this time on the north side. And so we invite you to come on out, walk, bike, roller skate, run, leave the car at home, and come out, meet neighbors, and participate in just activities in the street. Bring out your childhood again. Come by, stop by GIAC, do some double Dutch jump roping in the streets, any number of things. So that is occurring from 1 to 5 p.m., Cayuga Street, Court Street. I think, yes, Cayuga Court. It's the Streets Alive celebration. So, and I know they're also still looking for volunteers. You can go to the website, Streets Alive, and sign up to volunteer. So just wanted to share those two things with you.
Thanks. Anyone else before we go back to Anna for a second shot? Dooley.
Comments on comments. I remember many things about Stu Lewis. I won't attempt to repeat anything anyone else has said, but he was an amazing member of this community. And Carol, I have clothes from Holly's that I still wear. With respect to voting, Martha, I only learned in the last couple of days, and I think it's true, that our New York State Constitution requires that one register 10 days ahead of an election. So we will never have same-day voting in this state unless we amend our Constitution. I didn't know that. I think that's terrible.
Anyone else? Anna.
And I just wanted to add one thing about the voting, and thank you, Martha, for bringing it up. I appreciate it. I think one of the unfortunate practices or policies that we currently have is that changing affiliation is done, or the deadline is 6 months prior to the primary, in this case, I think, was October 10th. And hopefully that's something that we can revisit. I think a lot of us are aware that getting people engaged in something, we tend to do things last minute. 6 months ahead of time has not left a lot of time for that consideration for a lot of people, and I know that there are a lot of people that have been left out because of that. So hopefully that can be revisited by the state and something that we can look at in support of. I do know one case of someone who also contacted me who did register as a Democrat, so she thought, found out that she was registered as unaffiliated, requested that she see her original registration form, and there was a cross out on the form of where she had Democrat, and it was very unclear how that happened, and there's an investigation. So there are a few cases of some strange things happening in that regard. So potentially that might have been something you referred to, and hopefully that doesn't happen very often.
Thank you. Carol?
Yeah, to end this voting thing, I think these are two different issues, the changing of registrations and the states. I haven't heard this. I mean, we don't have results from New York, but I haven't heard about this as much in New York as in some other states where there has been a sort of a more systematic somehow glitches or something that have changed people's registrations. And that's very different from the question of should there be same-day registration, voting, whatever, or open voting. That's that. So I hope we would talk about those separately. On the positive note, at 2:30, quarter of three this afternoon, at my little polling place, I was voter number 250. As Democrats, Republicans. There's a turnout happening, which is encouraging. I ask how it's going and thank the people who spend the day sitting there. because it's not quite as long a day today in upstate as it is for some elections, but it's a long day, and it's a commitment on the people who serve. So thanks to them. And they did say that it's a lot of young people were turning out. So somehow people have managed to get engaged and come out, and you know, that's what we want to see, is people involved in our democracy, regardless of their perspective.
Okay. Before we go to regular reports, I'd like to take up the resolution out of the Planning Committee, because we have folks waiting for that in the audience. Martha, I wondered if you would take Resolution C.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mike. Resolution C, document 6207A, accepting the Tompkins County Energy Roadmap, evaluating our energy resources, and I so move. I can talk about it if...
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn Morey. Discussion. Martha.
Well, I want to thank the committee for working on the language. We got to, you know, we worked on this at a special meeting 2 weeks ago, and this is what you've got in front of you. And I especially want to thank the list of folks in the document itself, the many people who spent a lot, great deal of time to put this together, and especially Katie Borgel leading the effort, and Ed Marks and his whole staff. And I think this does show that we are leaders. I mean, whether some people are satisfied with not getting to 100% by tomorrow or whenever or not, this is a very unusual document in the country, maybe the world. So I think we have an enormous amount to be proud about to do this. So I'm really grateful for this, and looking forward to the next exercise, the study of the sort of the energy strategy, the trying to figure out how the hell we do it. So, and I want to just say, people should understand what this is and what this is not. First off, we're accepting it, not adopting it, because this is, you know, this document didn't say this one out of four strategies is what we want. It didn't say this is what we're going to do. The question that was asked was exactly the right first question, which was, if money were no object, and if we could tell everybody what to do, would it be possible to reach at least 80% reduction by 2050? That's not like a slam dunk. You have to actually do the math. And together with the folks at Cornell, and I know I'll butcher his name, so I won't even try. So together with the folks at Cornell, they did a lot of math to find out that, yes, it's possible, and it's possible to go beyond that goal, because, you know, we saw that, you know, there was like 300% of our needs could be met. I'm making up the number here. 300% of our needs could be met by solar, and 500% by wind or what. So we have more than enough capacity if money were no object and if we could tell everybody what to do. If we actually owned every house and could insulate every house, if we actually didn't have to worry about $2.5 billion to put up 9 miles of solar panels. So, as hard as this was, I'm afraid that the next part is probably harder, because we have to really crunch the numbers and say, okay, well, this much investment will get us this much emissions reduction. Okay, but investment by whom? And is that taxpayers? Is it homeowners? Is it landlords? Is it business owners? Is it the state? Is it... So it's always easy to spend somebody else's money. We have to figure out these really hard priorities. And which of these investments is going to give us the biggest reduction in emissions the quickest. So, and at the same time, say which ones might have additional benefits, like creating more jobs and helping people with their pocketbooks and making our buildings more comfortable, et cetera. So as complex as this was, what's coming next is going to be even more complex and involve some really tough choices. But I am really thrilled with the product. I am firmly committed to, I mean, the idea of 80% by 2050 is not a good enough goal. Let's just get going on doing it. Let's not argue about the goal. If we can do better, we're going to do better. Okay. So I really feel this is a strong document, and there's plenty of science to say we have to do even more than this faster, but I think we've got enough to get started.
Carol?
Yeah, I add my thanks to all of those who worked on this. As the legislator who sat on the committee, I can attest to the many, many hours of work. People signed up to be on this committee, and it then turned out that, as some of you have heard this already before, but for those who haven't, it then turned out that we went through many iterations, and the more we learned and asked questions, the more we realized there was to learn. So there was a lot of technical information that members of the committee committed to really poring through and commenting on. I want to make the point that this, to talk about a diverse group of people from different sides of aisles, however you define those aisles, not politically, but from different sides and perspectives in relation to the environment, energy, the utility representatives, the community representatives, the academic representatives. People really came to this and opened up a dialogue. I mean, people who were literally in court with each other in other aspects of their lives came together and said, we're going to work on this together. And did it effectively, and came to agreement on what we might be able to look at as feasible, or what we think about as feasible. I want to make the point that this is not the type of plan that comes with one price tag. There's no such thing on this as, well, here now we've passed this plan and here's a number of dollars. It is, much of the delivery will come in the form of public education, policy, incentives, bringing together many players who come at the problem from many different perspectives and aspects of life, rather than an outlay of public dollars during our budget process, whether it's Cooperative Extension working on its piece, whether it's NYSEG and the power plants and the new power players, the Black Oaks and the future players like that who come in, and we hopefully have created ways to provide access to the market here, the way we are with gravity renewables and our own hydro plant, to make that kind of thing available. I mean, there'll be so many pieces of this that we're not looking to any one player to say, you come up with the dollars. It will respond to changes in the market. It will respond to, it has room in it to our own energy roadmap, has room in it to expand and adjust as New York State determines the outcome and new policies and ways of doing business in New York State under REV, as Tesla and Honda and Toyota and GE and GM and Ford come out with new car models. There are so many aspects of this that will come together as the years go by, and this creates a framework for thinking about how we'll try to get our own county in line with the options that are out there. So thanks again to all of those who participated, and it's just great to have come to this day where we will be whatever we're doing, adopting, accepting, the highest level of that we can do would be where I would go with it.
Anna.
Just very briefly, I wanted to thank you all as well so much for the work that you've done. And two things that I wanted to point out very briefly is that the to everyone and to the public that's listening is that the scenarios that were drawn up are specifically based on current technology. And I very much appreciate the conclusion that we would be able to reach the goals that we've set with the current technology, but that the resolution also acknowledges that there will be a review every few years, recognizing that the technology will be changing. So, you know, given that, you know, we can only go uphill from there. So that seems like a very positive outcome to me, so thank you.
Anyone else? If I may, I just want to say that we're the best county in the state of New York. I feel that very, very strongly. And one of the reasons we are is because when we set ourselves tasks, like this energy roadmap, we spend the time, we spend the staff work, we bring in the expertise, we do our very, very best to examine it fairly and try to bring information to not only this legislature but to the people of our county about what is the best actions to take, what are the upsides, what are the downsides, what are the expenses that could be associated with it. And when we end up with a product like this report, it's a good one. And I certainly add my thanks to our planning department and all the task force that worked on this one. It's a great document. And as I spoke last time, I love it being called a roadmap because we can try to get there from here many different ways, and we will get there. Martha.
Just wanted to ask Ed or Katie to help us with the names. I'm sorry. Is it Key Max Zong?
Max
Chung?
Yeah.
Max Chung and
Shiwei
Chung,
also known as
Hannah Chung, from Cornell. All right. Thank you, and my apologies to them.
All right. Ready to vote? I'm going to ask for a roll call.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, let's go back to reports. For my report, I just wanted to mention that one of the groups I serve on is the Energy and Economic Development Task Force, which was put together by our planning department and our Compass County Area Development to look at the issues in the short term of economic development and energy and moving forward with energy improvements so that we can cut down on our carbon emissions, among other things. And that's been a group of, I don't know, how many are there, 15, 20 people on that, and they've had an amazing number of meetings. Charlie Troutman from the Science Center has been chairing that group. We had another meeting this morning, began reviewing a draft report, and hopefully by next month, the group will want to come in and give you at least an initial briefing on what that report will contain. We'll be also taking comments from the public in the meanwhile. So just thought I'd bring you up to date on that.
Mike?
Yes.
When are the public comment opportunities?
We're still working on that schedule. It isn't firm yet, but they'll be announced. It's going to be in the next couple of weeks that we'll have that schedule put together. For fun, I put on the back wall a map. And you might want to stop by and take a look at it. That map is from 1829. It's a photocopy of a map. And it shows what Tompkins County looked like back then, very early. It includes the town of Hector, which was part of the county, and also the west part of the town of Newfield, which was part of our county. And those two pieces were ceded to the creation of Schuyler County in 1853. We actually used to have land on both lakes, both Cayuga and Seneca Lake back then. I thought you might find that of interest. And that is playing well with our Bicentennial Commission, which had a press conference since our last meeting and announced the resolution that you folks passed, in which we proclaimed next year, 2017, as the bicentennial year for Tompkins County. And we're already starting to get feedback from employees and other groups saying that with ideas about what we can do next year to make it a year-long celebration that will talk about our roots and our present activities and what we can be doing in the future. So I just thought I'd tell you about that. I don't have any chair's appointments tonight. So let's go to our county administrator's report. Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. I have a few disparate items in my report tonight, beginning with the mental health department. There's a number of important developments there, all good. Our performance improvement plan has been accepted by New York State. You recall that that was a very important part of our response to the recent audit. A major element of that plan was to secure the licenses to provide counseling within the schools. Those licenses have been secured. So we are, again, actually counseling never ceased in the schools, but now we're operating under the license approved by the state, and that's good too. The most important thing of all, and this is recent news, is that the state has also renewed our certificate to operate a clinic. And again, we never ceased operating our clinic, but that withdrawal of the certificate was an important part of what we've been going through over the last couple of months, and that has been restored. So I think we have to recognize the diligence of that department and mental health department and everybody that works there to really laser focus on setting things right. They've done an excellent job in doing a lot of difficult things. I think they're on a very good path. A little frosting on that cake. It looks like the renovations of the ground floor of the mental health building, which we've talked about for some time, will be done in early May. So there'll be an opening of that sometime in the month of May, and that's going to improve access for clients. It's going to improve security for the employees. It will improve the aesthetics of that building. So all good on the mental health front. During the budget process last year, you recall that we put money into our contingent account for reentry programs. And ever since that time, work has been underway to determine the best way to invest that money. It was $100,000 that was put aside in our contingent account, the best way to target that money to have the greatest effect on reentry. There is now a draft plan, reentry plan, that has gone through CJATI. It will be making its way. Peter was probably going to report on this, so I probably stepped on his toes, but this will be at public safety this week for its rollout. If all goes well in public safety, the next step there will be to bring a resolution to the legislature that would release that money in contingency to be able to implement that plan. So the legislature will see the plan along with the request for money within perhaps the next cycle. So we're moving forward with that. I think you'll be pleased by what's being recommended. I promise you this was disparate. I also sent an email right before I came over here. I forwarded an email from Mayor Myrick, who apologized for not being able to make today's planned special meeting of Human Services to talk about the drug plan and explain the reason why he couldn't make it. You'll see in the note that it's a pretty good it's a pretty good reason. He is at the UN this evening at a global summit on drug policy that he was invited to talk to. So he is there tonight. He promises a speedy rescheduling of the presentation of the drug plan for the entire legislature. And from there, again, we will bring it to committee for that plan to be vetted and for us to be able to assess the best ways for us to move forward from a county perspective. The last thing on my list is I'm stepping on toes all over the place tonight. Jim, I'm sure, was going to remind you, probably still will. Our budget retreat is Monday evening at 5:30 at TCAT. Just to kind of begin to set the table and segue into to Rick's report, there are always challenges when you begin to prepare a budget, and we begin before anybody else in New York State. So one of the challenges is very early, so things are still a little fuzzy. The largest of the challenges this year seems to be the sales tax. And Rick will talk about that, but we just received the first quarter report for sales tax. It is the fourth quarter out of the last five where we've seen decline in revenues. So we're concerned about that. It will be a limiting factor in how we approach 2017. It's something that we are keeping our eye very close on. But I think we've been kind of telegraphing. We're a little worried about sales tax. First quarter kind of verified the concerns. So, again, it will affect 2017 and how we approach that. As the year goes on, it could affect the way we operate this year as well. So I always leave my report with a little dark cloud over the silver lining. So I'm closing my report with that. But, again, Monday evening at 5:30 at TCAT will be the annual budget retreat.
Questions? Peter?
Joe, is there any possibilities that our achievements in keeping our responsibilities straight in the mental health department will possibly lessen the penalties that have been assessed against us?
We intend to talk to the state about that, yes.
Okay, let's go to Jim, then Carol, then Martha.
Question, Joe. From the point that we learned our license was no longer effective until we got it now or renewed, how long has that been?
I'd have to look, Jim. It feels like 2 to 3 months.
Carol?
Is that true that we're actually the first county in New York State to start working on our budget? Or was that just a general manner of speaking?
No, I think we are. I think it relates. And, again, I think our process is also the best process in the state. I wasn't around when it was created, so it's not a matter of ownership. But in setting our targets very early at the beginning of the process about tax levy and, therefore, spending targets, It provides a discipline in this process that doesn't exist in other counties. So our setting targets as early as we do, I think, is probably the first action on a next year budget of any county in the state.
So without becoming the last one in New York State, is there any way in which tweaking our process in future years to make it a little bit later would be make it easier for you and our department heads and Rick to come up with estimates that would be more useful and that wouldn't have to be changed as much as we end up having to adjust later?
We've given that lots of thought over the years. It's a balancing of a lot of different things. I think there is such great advantage of having targets established early that it's worth that bit of risk factor in the accuracy of the projections. In setting them early, getting those to departments, it gives the departments 2 months to work on their budgets. That's about the right amount of time for them to look at it. It gives me a month, and then it gives the legislature about 2 months for their own review. Those feel like good blocks of time if you want a thoughtful budget and a thoughtful review of the budget. So at least I'm fine with the timeline.
Martha?
Thanks. This may seem a dumb question, but you sent an email about the reason Svantec didn't...
I forwarded an email from him to me.
Yeah, I'm not getting it. Did you?
Right before I left. So it would have been 5-ish.
Okay. I thought we had our email problems figured out, but I'm not seeing it.
While Rick's talking, I'll make sure it got sent on mine. And if it didn't get sent, I'll do it again.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, let's go to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
So Joe assumed that Rick was going to talk, but I wasn't going to say anything. Brief report. I just, in the spirit of it being a primary day, I thought I'd kind of update the legislature on some of the issues that we in the Board of Elections do face on Election Day. And three of them come to mind. Mostly when people show up at the polls and they find that they're not registered. One is the motor voter, where people believe they're registered and find out that they're not. And interestingly, those have decreased over the year. And today, actually, the state sent us a phone number for people to contact if that happened at the polls. And that's probably because that issue has decreased over the year. So I think that's getting better. But that's always been an issue. People show up and find that that didn't work. The second is simply the mail. We've had numerous instances where people mail it in and they just don't get there. And sometimes they get there late and the law says that it has to be sent by a certain date and get there by a certain date. And sometimes it just either doesn't get there or it just takes too long to get there. So those are issues which come up. And the third issue which comes up, which is, I wouldn't say unique to this area, but probably more prevalent in this community than any other, is the voter drives on campuses. Many people, young people, sign up to vote on voter drives, sometimes by fraternities at Cornell or maybe one of the campaigns, like Bernie Sanders for president at IC or something like that. And they find that when they go to vote that those registrations didn't make it to the Board of Elections. And for those people, and, you know, with the presidential election coming up, that's the biggest time that these happen, and people are often disappointed. So, I mean, that is probably not the best way to register to vote. But in the event you do, I would certainly recommend people actually check with the Board of Elections to make sure they got there, because they don't always. And people end up being very disappointed when they show up to vote and realize that the campus drive that they signed up with ended up not being at the Board of Elections. So just some thoughts. Those are issues that we face on election days, and certainly we will face them in November, if not today.
Julie?
When the Board of Elections gets a pile of registration forms from a campus drive, do they send out postcards to the newly registered voters so that they would – that's a way to check if you actually got your registration in?
I don't – not necessarily at the time, but I think they send out the same notices that you would get for other people. But a lot of them are younger people. They don't know when they'd be receiving a notice, et cetera. So, you know, the fact that they didn't get a notice would not alarm them often.
I just had this week a – dear friend of mine went to the ICU on Monday and was there for several, is still there, was unconscious for several days, is coherent now and speaking, and I wanted to get him an absentee ballot. And I called today to the Board of Elections and was told, yesterday is the last day you can get an absentee ballot. But I can try, and then I can try to get a judge to say it should count. So it's a real challenge when there's an unfortunate event like that.
Yeah, that's,
so I hope you can help me, Jonathan.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, one of the issues in that is, I mean, there's the law and there's some power for a judge to correct things like errors. So, for example, the lost in the mail, the...
this is not an error. This is...
Yeah, exactly. So when things aren't an error but an illness or something like that, there's probably not really power in the law for the judge to do anything about that.
Okay, thank you, John.
Sure.
Let's go to Rick Snyder, our Director of Finance.
As Joe alluded to, we're going to talk a little bit about sales tax tonight because we have three months or one quarter to look at. So I'd like for you to look at the two pages that are part of your budget packet, pages 4 and 5, where we'll discuss January and February's. And then in your red folder, after the agenda was submitted, I was able to complete the March receipts, so you'll find the March table in your red folder along with the quarter-to-date information. So first we'll look at the month of January. We have 3 months that, as Joe said, we're not pulling in too good for sales tax receipts, but the county's portion of sales tax distributions for January was down 4.43%. And I always mention, look at the middle of that January chart, and you can see the county portion there, right, pretty much in the center. And as of the end of January, year-to-date distributions for the county's portion totaled $2,495,108 compared to $2,610,882 in 2015. And this represents a decrease of $115,774 year over year. So when we're looking at January, you see a 4.43% negative or decrease compared to the January before in 2015. Then if you look at the next chart, as we analyze February's, you can see that the county's portion of sales tax distributions was down 5.46%. So we went from 4.4 now to about 5.5% decrease compared to last year or February of 2015. As of the end of February, year-to-date distributions for the county's portion totaled $4,451,977 compared to $4,680,751 in 2015. This represents a decrease of $228,774 year over year, or a negative 4.89% decrease. So when you're looking at the 2 months together, or year to date, as of the end of February, was close to 5% down. Then if you go to the red folder and we look at the March, there's two distribution summaries that look almost identical. One is for the month of March. One is for the quarter, the whole quarter to date. We'll look first at the month of March, where you can see that the county's portion of sales tax distribution for March was up 2.55% compared to last year. So now that's the first month that we've seen recovery, month of March, yet it was only up 2.5%. As of the end of March, year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion total $7,374,773 compared to $7,530,768 in 2015. This represents a decrease of $155,995 year over year, or a negative 2.0%. So it improved a bit in March, bringing our year-to-date shortfall, when we're looking at it at the end of March, down to just a little bit over 2%. So we're 2% down for the year. And then if you go to the last table called tax distribution summary, this one is for the whole quarter. And once again, if you're looking at sales tax distributions for the first quarter, it's that middle section again. The quarter was down 2.07% compared to the first quarter. And I like to be able to show this particular analysis for the quarter, because if you look at the county's portion, the city of Ithaca's portion, the municipality's portion, you can see that there's a wide variety there of who was losing the most, who was gaining the most. You'll see that the county was down 2%, but that the city of Ithaca was up 2.25%. You'll see that the municipality are down about 5.9%. So they were hit the worst. And then my last comments are on the very last listing of quarterly receipts. I try to provide to you at the end of each quarter this multi-year presentation going back to 1997 that lists all the county sales tax receipts. If you look at the second column, that's the county only share. And in that second column, you can see the county's portion of sales tax for the first quarter alone was $7,374,773. That's there at the very bottom of the second page. And that compares to $7,530,768 in 2015. Once again, that same decrease of just a little over 2%. And if you're interested in the town and the city share, you'll see that the town, which is in the third column, the town's village's portion of sales tax for the first quarter alone was $2,923,560 compared to $3,106,055 in 2015. And that was that decrease of 5.88%. Once again, those towns and villages getting hit the hardest. Finally, in the far right column, city share, if you're looking at the city of Ithaca, they had a higher first quarter than 2015 for an additional $61,881 in sales tax receipt, a 2.25% increase higher than 2015. So you see there the city is the only one out of these three groupings that has had an improved condition over in that first quarter. We're going to be looking a lot more at sales tax. I haven't been able to provide yet for those who've asked the moving lines, the graphs that show this compared to the CPI or how it relates to last year in a graphical representation. Joe will be bringing a lot of that to us next week on Monday night when he's looked historically at the sales tax, and we'll be concentrating a lot on analysis of sales tax, what it means going forward into programming the 2017 budget. He's paid a lot of thought to this, so tune in next Monday night when we'll be looking at the sales tax with even a greater analysis to tell us how we should be gauging this going forward in the future. And that's it,
Mike Sigler.
I was just wondering, do we have any idea how much is attributable to just it being a warmer winter and people aren't spending the money on energy that they normally would?
It's all speculation. I mean, I think those of us who think about this a lot think that's probably a contributing cause. So we tax home heating fuel. So if fuel costs are down, energy costs are down, that means the revenues are down. Same thing with gasoline. There's a tax on gasoline, prices down, sales tax down. Many of you have heard me say this too many times, that usually when that happens, the money we don't spend on gasoline and energy, we spend on T-shirts and refrigerators, and so there's really not much of an impact on the sales tax. There's something interesting going on here where there's clearly savings, the economy is clearly strong, but the savings aren't translating into consumer spending on taxable items elsewhere in the economy. And whether that means that maybe people are taking their savings and paying down their MasterCards, paying down student loans, those kinds of things, that's about as good as at least I can do in terms of trying to figure out what might be going on.
Martha?
Well, there might also be a limit to how much of that fuel savings can be absorbed, you know, can be redirected, and how much, you know, just doesn't get spent. I would be really interested to see lines of town and village share versus city share. It looks fairly consistent that the city is doing quite a bit better than outside the city. Of course, probably not you know, before the Commons was reopened last year. So I don't know, that may confuse things a lot, but I'd be really interested in that from the point of view of, well, we have mostly most of our commercial area is the Village of Lansing and the Town of Ithaca. But it would be interesting if we could have a look at that just from the sort of planning and economic development point of view. Thanks.
Quick question, and may show my ignorance of this, but we're not really able to track online purchases to fit into this, so could this to some extent also be that savings, particularly in smaller municipalities, would be more affected by those savings converting to online purchases rather than on-ground purchases?
Apparently not in the town of Caroline.
It's a good question about how online purchases are tracked. I don't know. It's a mystery to me. We're supposed to get our share of online taxes back. I find it really weird, and I know we're going off course here, but I find it really weird that when you look at state collections in the first quarter, mm-hmm. state collections are up 4%. Mm-hmm. But then when you look at county collections across the state, on average they're up 2%. I don't understand how that can be unless there's, I'm speculating again, could that be a reflection of some oddities in online, the distribution of online sales taxes? Mm-hmm. And I can't figure out anything else. But I don't know that there's a way to track online sales taxes back to the host communities.
Yeah.
The other problem with that, I think a lot of online purchases are tracked by zip code. Mm-hmm. And we have, for example, the city of Ithaca has a large zip code area that goes into the towns and village and some of the villages. And so that might be being reported as a city receipt and not for the particular town or village where the transaction occurred, or the people who made the transaction where they live.
So that would exacerbate it.
It's even very difficult to try to figure this out. But Joe, I hope we could send a letter to Department of Taxation and Finance with that question that you just asked and say, can you please explain it to us?
I've asked NYSAC, and I can certainly direct that letter to the state, too. Yeah.
Who had their hand up? I'm sorry, Carol.
I did. Yeah, I think often when you make an online purchase, they're actually using the +4 as well. So it's some of that effect you're talking about might be mitigated, and I mean they know where the addresses are because they've got to make the deliveries. So anyway, that's not what I raised my hand about. I do notice that everywhere seemed to have done a lot better between February and March. You know, those areas that were negative, for the most part, I think, went to less negative. And the city, of course, went from negative to positive. And so the theory about whether the heating difference would make it, I mean, March got colder again. But, I mean, is there any speculation you can give about it? Is this a general upward trend of the economy that
it's
might
be good?
It's
not just the weather. What I've come to find out since being here through a harsh winter and a mild winter is that it's not only the weather, but what we think is the biggest thing is the very exceedingly low prices of energy, the low prices a barrel of all oil when it gets down to $26-$27 a barrel, now back up in the 40s. But when we saw that plummet down, that really takes a very large dip. And not just, as you all notice, at the gas at the pump, when you pump your gas for your car or for your truck or your moped, it's one of those things that we see in our energy prices in our home as it ripples through the whole energy sector. And those prices have been so deflated as of around last year. At this time, they were predicting 13% further decrease well into 2016. Well, now we're into 2016, and it's another 19% on top of that other 16% decrease that they predicted before because they've stayed low for so long. And, I mean, I think it's remarkable that we're seeing it mostly in the sales tax, and that hurts. A lot of places are seeing it in a lot of other places that we don't. A lot of places it affects jobs. There's a lot less jobs, and it affects unemployment in a bad way. And so, fortunately, Tompkins County, we've been fairly insulated from some of those other negative factors, but we are seeing it mostly in the sales tax factor. And the other thing I told Joe the other day as we were talking about why this affects our community, why don't they spend more when they have more dollars in their wallet? And you have to consider that the individuals that live in our county, how elastic is that supply and demand on those extra dollars that they get? If you're living in a family where it's hand to mouth, you know, it's hand to mouth, and you're only making a very, very small or low wage, or you're on a number of programs, you could get $60 or $80 or $100 more a month, but that's not going to make you go out and buy a new car or make you go out and buy a big ticket item. That $60 or $80 or $100 more, you don't even see it or sense it or feel it because you're at that very low level. On the other hand, there's a lot of people in Tompkins County that are very high income, and they would get this extra shot of money, and they're not going to go out and spend it either because they've already got their second car, second boat, place on the lake or what have you. It's that middle portion of the economy that needs to be more robust, that needs to be located here in Tompkins County, and that's the middle America. That's the middle class folks. Those are the ones who spend the dollars, and those are the ones who, if you give them more money, such as, you know, money in their pocket when they pay less at the gas pumps, they could go out and spend that. That's very elastic. That part of the curve is very elastic. But what we've been looking at over time is we don't have that sector of the community growing here. Martha's bringing it up all the time with the housing. That's the section of our county that we really need to be improving the housing needs, is that middle sector of our economy. I mean, because the jobs are here, but people are having to drive in to this county instead of living here. And so we haven't been able to keep up with the housing to provide for the middle class. And we see that by the number of transients that come in and out. So part of the curve is that elastic part of the curve, and we need to be able to attract more of them, not just to work here in Tompkins County, but to be able to live here in Tompkins County.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks. So I won't go into the political discussion about how we can get that middle class back.
Thank you.
But, okay. But I was noticing that we're doing better in March, and so to what do you attribute the fact that we're doing better in March? And then that's one question I have, and I have another question about the 3%, 1%.
Yeah, Joe's always saying that he doesn't trust individual months. We like to look at quarterly data.
Okay.
But the second thing is, number one, March is historically, it's usually a better month because, I mean, I remember looking at this last
March
year at this time, and January and February and March last year, we started really, really poor. As the year went on, our second quarter was better. We started to have quite a bit of recovery. Our last quarter of the year is where we really try to make up the difference. So part of me wants to say that this is not an unusual first quarter because our first quarter is always the worst of the four. But, yes, comparing it to last quarter last year, it's even below that. So when I think of March, March is one of those months that people are pent up, and after December and January and February, when they're frozen in their homes and everybody's a little bit like my wife. I hope she's not watching this, but she's always saying she has cabin fever by the end of February, and you might feel that way too. So you want to get out, and that's when people begin to start to do things, when it begins to lighten up a little bit, and the winter becomes less severe for us. But why this particular March, I couldn't tell you why it's particularly up or down.
Oh, well, because I'm really, you know,
some of this, it's up almost 10% March over March. Am I reading this wrong? From 15 to 16? Anyway, so we could speculate and not come up with the answer. Maybe this one you can explain, though. There's the 3% and the 1%, and I understand those are going to be different numbers. I don't understand why the percent change, if they're based on the same amount of sales and there's the 3% section and the 1% section, why would those be different percent changes? Whether you're looking
really
at the
know,
county
that,
or the cities or the towns.
That's the way the state collects it, and it has to do with credits and things that they offer to certain folks. I remember when we got this particular quarterly return, even after I did this March and quarterly return, we found out the reconcile numbers and everything, and the adjustments that were made to our first quarter were $500,000 to the negative. $500,000 to the negative. And and that's just an adjustment that's made to the, that's part of the numbers that we're getting that was due to companies overpaying and getting refunds and rebates back and lawsuits and things of that nature. But some quarters we get a positive adjustment, which means the numbers that are reported are a little bit inflated because we had a positive adjustment. Other months, such as this particular quarter, are negatively impacted because we had a bad first quarter, and on top of that, we had a $500,000 hit in negative adjustments. So I think if you take that into consideration, you know, maybe we're really not that bad from an economical standpoint right here in Tompkins County.
Rick, I would hope that you're alerting our town supervisors and village mayors in those towns that take the sales tax direct, because they need to pay attention to this just like we do, and they're the ones that are hurting the most here in the first quarter. Okay, are we ready to move on? Thank you, Rick, for that long and I won't say satisfying report, but we appreciated it.
It's good to have March thrown into that at the end. That was helpful.
Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Let's go to the consent agenda. I don't think we have any appointments, do we? There are no appointments, so I'll just read the resolutions on consent. Resolution A, out of the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, authorizing the filing of an application to New York State for the Household Hazardous Waste State Assistance Program and signing of the associated state contract under the appropriate laws of the state of New York. That's ID 6246. Resolution B, authorizing...
Off.
That's off, okay. Those are the only two resolutions, so there's only one on the consent agenda. Do I get a motion on the consent agenda? Anna, seconded by Dave. Ready to vote? All those in favor? Please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous on the consent agenda. We're doing good tonight, folks. Let's go to committee reports. Old Library Committee. The Old Library Committee did meet. We had a short meeting at the request of our preferred developers, the Travis Hyde Group, and also Lifelong folks. And they brought us up to date on their latest activities with respect to going through the process of approval at the city Planning Board and the Landmarks Preservation Commission. They have made some changes to the footprint of the building, which now remains totally on the old library site. Lifelong has decided to keep its present administration building for its administration. It will have use of the community room in the new building for many activities without rent. They are planning to sell the white building, put that on the market, or if it may already be on the market. They think that this will help them become financially more stable of an organization. The space that they were going to Occupy will be converted into covered parking. The number of units proposed has been reduced from 60 to 57. And there are, I believe, the parking spaces reduced from 30 to 27, if I remember the exact figures. So they just wanted us to be aware of what was happening. Will, then Carol, then Dooley.
So, Mike, when does the nature of the project be enough change that we could legitimately question whether this is what we voted to accept? Or is it basically anything?
I don't think that the committee was questioning it, but I think the main thing we were talking about was the schedule, which we hope to have approvals, and now the sale of the building in October is the proposal. And frankly, they've been held back by the process at the city. I don't know how to answer your question, Will. If you have an objection, I guess you'd have to voice it.
I understand things do change, but these are significant changes, and certainly one of the strongest arguments made at the time that we voted was because it supposedly was addressing the needs of lifelong. I completely understand that on further reflection, they've discovered to go on in another direction. In some ways, I think it may be a better one. But the project has changed. One other thing that I've heard, perhaps, Mike, you can tell me if I'm correct, was that the original design involved a green space that sort of was going to be open to the public and connected to essentially an extension of DeWitt Park. My understanding is that, basically on the recommendation of the city, that is now going to be cut off. Was that discussed?
It's still in the same location.
But not accessible.
The city is asking for some kind of a walled area for separation because they don't, both the developers and I think some of us on the committee were scratching our heads as to why you wouldn't want it to be visually an expansion of DeWitt Park, but there seemed to be an objection to that. And the developers are doing what the city is requesting them to do, which is to put a low wall and plantings that would separate, I guess, inside the sidewalk they're talking about. I had Carol.
Yeah, so a couple of other changes that we heard about that I think are really significant would I think kick in Will's question about at what point is it a big change. One is the mix in numbers of bedrooms. It was going to be, I think, 1 and 2 bedroom units, and now they're talking about a number of 3 bedroom units. And the biggest is that it was originally going to be senior apartments, so 55 and over, and now they're talking about all ages. And once you don't limit it to seniors and over, I don't think you even under fair housing can even ask about ages if you're you can limit to 55 and over. There are mechanisms to do that. So that's a huge change. Anyway, we might want to figure out how do we even talk about this.
Julie.
Carol mentioned the two things I was going to mention.
Anna.
Just one addition to that, and I thank you, Will, for bringing that up. That was exactly my concern, particularly reading the original resolution that acknowledges the acceptance of the proposal after review of the existing RFP. There's also the other component of the fact that the building no longer has an official mixed-use capacity, which was specifically outlined in the RFP. There's the one building that can be used for a meeting room, but the definition of mixed use, and we can evaluate that on greater detail if we would like to.
No, there's also still other commercial space in the building.
And what is the other commercial space?
It will be rented. It's on the first
from the meeting room will be rented. The one meeting room.
No, there are other spaces.
Other could be offices. Could be
right. Okay.
Or could be retail.
Okay. So then that one point is corrected, and thank you. Yeah. But there are a few things that I would love to evaluate, considering that. And there was one other point that I had, but that escapes me right now. If I come up with it, I'll raise my hand again.
Have Martha, then Peter.
I would let Peter go first.
Peter?
Yeah, I'm just wondering how much leeway do we have? Do we have the right to cancel the original agreement that we made with Travis Hyde or not? I mean, what? We all understood that the fact that they had to go through the city process meant that it was not necessary. We don't have that kind of power to control what they do with the land. So we always understood that there could have been changes in the design based on what the city had done. So does that allow us to change our decision or not?
I would defer to Jonathan if he were here, but my feeling is that I think it's a matter of trust. If we have gone through a process that's taken well over 2 years and selected a developer who said from the very beginning, all the developers said this, that, you know, what we're showing you a picture of and what the design is when we go through the city process may change. And that's what I think we're seeing here. That's why we've got three fewer units than they had before, but we have similar parking spaces, although it's being addressed in a different way as closed parking rather than open parking. So the answer, could we theoretically pull the rug out? I suppose so, but I would think that would not be an ethical thing to do. Let's see. Martha.
Well, I almost feel like anything I said would dilute your last statement, which I think was pretty strong. But I will add that in the housing fund, with the Community Housing Development Fund that Cornell City and we do as a partnership, we have been struggling to get developers to come into town to put up, even to propose anything. We are trying to reevaluate how we do things. We've just added a sort of rolling admission kind of application for smaller developers so that we can try to, you know, make it more possible for new people, not just those who apply for tax credit programs to apply. In other words, smaller projects, newer developers, we're trying to figure out whatever kind of way we can, basically to spend the money that's sitting there, having been committed. We have something like $800,000 allocated but not spent, or, you know, set aside but not spent for affordable housing projects because we can't get the developers. If this county goes through the laborious kind of process we had, which was correct and fine and you know, responsible for a unique parcel of land, et cetera, and sign a contract and good for, you know, pass a resolution. And we didn't sign a contract, or did we? Maybe we did. Or it's
I don't think so.
Because it's not the sale yet. But if we go through all this with a developer in good faith, and then change our minds and say, oh, wait, maybe we meant the other developer. I don't know how to even look a developer in the eye in this county and say, please come and build the housing that we so desperately need.
Anna?
And I think that it's not a situation where we would be flippantly changing our mind for no reason. I think that in this case, I understand the question was asked, Peter, at least how I understood you, was, you know, if significant changes were made to such an extent and the project no longer seemed feasible in some way or another, would that be a grounds? I mean, I understand that, and I appreciate that. The question actually that I had that I couldn't remember is, my understanding, and please someone correct me if I'm wrong, but this project also has one exit from the parking lot that is over the easement of the other properties and goes onto Buffalo Street.
And I've had some constituents ask some concern if that's the only point of exit. That is maybe an issue or a problem that I'm concerned with in this, and if there have been any discussion from the developer of other possible strategies for exit from that parking lot.
Yes, they said that the exit from the parking area would be to Court Street, but they would be negotiating to see whether they could have usage of that right-of-way to Buffalo Street, right?
So as an additional, but that the main one would be to Court Street?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Carol.
Yeah, it was one of the reasons for the change in design had to do with that easement. So to Peter and Martha's questions, I don't think that anybody is saying let's just change our minds. I think the question is more what level of changes is more than do we go back and say to the developer, no, we picked you for X, Y, or Z reason. You know, a change of the number of parking spaces, that it's within five spaces of what they did before, no, that's not a big change. But if the legislature felt that one of the reasons that we picked a particular developer is because we believed in senior housing, and now they're saying, well, we might do better in the market if it was student housing. Is that a big enough change? So and not to say you can't do the project, but our expectation was that the project would be X, and that was the target audience you came to us and said you wanted to reach, and that's the target audience that the majority of the group felt most strongly about reaching. I wasn't part of that majority, but that was what the majority said. And so what's the mechanism? And I think that's what Will was asking, I think that's what Peter is asking, what's the mechanism that we have to work with the developer and say, you're working with the city, you changed this part of the design or that part of the design, or it's great that you're going to give free access to Lifelong for 20 years. I mean, this is a huge thing. They're going to give free access to Lifelong for 20 years, or rent-free. I don't know if it's utility-free, but rent-free access to Lifelong to use a community room. I mean, that's wonderful.
And to lease it out.
But
sublease.
Yeah. I don't think they have the exact terms of that yet. So there's a lot of changes they're talking about that are I think very positive. But for those that weren't the things that we signed on to, what mechanism do we have? And I think that's a legitimate question. And it's not an in your face to the developer. It's here's what our aims were, and as we worked together over those months.
Let me get Jim and Mike, because they haven't spoken yet.
Mike, my only comment is that we selected a preferred developer, and Carol, you and other people around this table should know much better than most that when a project is started, it never, never ends up the way the drawing looked the first day you saw it. Things happen. They have to go through an incredible city process to get to put a spade in the ground. And, and I'm sure you recognize that. And these guys are doing what they need to do according to the rules that they have to live by in the city. And if they cut three apartments, they still have, I don't know how many, it's a bunch. And I'll say it one time again. County legislators are not good at dealing with development projects because they don't do them and they're not familiar with them. City council people are much better at that because they have to deal with them all the time. That's not our business. Development is not our business. And a lot of us think, oh, we're experts, but we're really not.
Mike?
I'll be quick, too. I want to ask Duxton, is that true? You're better at this? There. Your expertise in this, I guess. There you go. I just wanted to clarify something. Listen, I forget who voted for this. I mean, I know I did. And the reasons you're bringing up, I think everybody voted for it for maybe a different reason. I didn't want senior housing, frankly. I think that generations living together is a noble goal. I don't like this whole, we're going to split generations and have senior citizens live over here and young families live over here. I'd like everybody living together, frankly. And that was, it was my understanding, that's kind of one of their goals. The only reason I accepted the 55 was because 55 just isn't that old. I mean, 55, I'm like, okay, 10 years. So I think everybody voted for it for a different reason. And if we just don't go too far from whatever, but I agree with Martha. I mean, you can't, we're committed as far as I'm concerned. I mean, this is a done deal. So that's how I'm thinking anyway.
Let's take Leslin, then Martha, and then let's kind of wrap it up. Remember, this is just a committee report.
Thank you, Mr. Well, that's what you get for reporting. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Look, I didn't vote for the project. And I think part of what's bugging me about this whole thing is, and there's no pulling the rug out from underneath anybody, but what I feel like, unfortunately, and now that somebody's deliberately doing this, is that the rug was pulled over my eyes. So, and I just need to get that out there. We had numerous executive session meetings with A, B, C, and D, and Lifelong. When the decision got made that Lifelong was no longer going to be as attached to this project as it originally was, which, by the way, on this floor and in committee meetings played a very key role in a lot of the discussion and decision, I remember Dooley clearly asking, if this is the case, if Lifelong is a main factor, then we should put it in the RFP. We said, no, we can't do that. However, throughout the discussion, it played a very key role. Something changed. I'm not saying things can change. I'm not even talking about the doggone design, because that I understand. I may not be an expert, but I understand that designs will change. But something in that relationship changed, and we're now hearing about it. And it apparently, just in that discussion we had last week, it didn't just happen, because the property, the White House, is already on the market. That was already happening. So when were we going to be informed about that? That, for me, was a biggie in terms of just this project and the discussion that happened around it. So I feel a little bit, I don't know what the word is, angsty, is there such a word, about this, only for that reason. Now, when Carol brings up about, you know, some of the discussion that has to do, well, we think, you know, we'll do better in the market if we don't, if the, who we're selling our housing to, I mean, renting our housing to, is different from what was proposed, that also makes me sort of start thinking, was this originally your plan? You know, and if it wasn't, then what changed? Is it just a matter of economics and money? Because we know when we decided that we were going to put this old library up, we had several people representing, or at least a vocal group of people representing seniors, who came out asking for condos, asking for senior living downtown, asking for this to happen downtown. They were very vocal. Didn't hear much about from other folks. We heard from that group. And then so that was sort of a concession place for me. And like Mike, 55, I was like, I'm soon to be 55. I'm getting ready to retire. That age and party. So I don't think that's that old. I think that's a good age. You know, so that felt okay, but now that has changed as well. And I don't know what it means in terms of, is there a ratio that we're going to be, you know, 50% of the property will be senior or no, or just whoever comes in at that. In addition, you know, the changes in terms of the number of rooms, you lessen the number of units, but you increase the I don't know what you call it, but three bedrooms as opposed to two. They were going to be one and two, and now we're going to add a number of three bedrooms. And that's certainly a need, but I didn't quite hear the argument around it. And maybe they were just sort of presenting at that point. So at one point, I really just kind of tuned up, Mike. So I hear what you say about the committee not. I really did, because I was beginning to feel like somebody's pulling the rug over my eyes or something here. That's how I felt.
Leslie, you may remember the comment they made about why they were looking at three-bedroom units. Some of the folks that they had been talking to had been down asking about the condominiums in the past.
One person, they say.
They'd like to rent an apartment, but they needed more space.
One person.
They mentioned one person. Yes, I don't know.
They said we spoke to one person.
But I just want to point that out to you, that was said at our meeting.
Right, one person. So I hear what you're saying, and I understand that. I'm not knocking that. I'm saying I didn't necessarily hear the compelling reason. I'm not knocking it changing. It just began to feel to me like sort of was this, kind of part of the plan all along. Then just let me know that. That's how I feel. I'm not saying anybody's doing anything wrong. It's just how I felt. That's all I'm saying.
And Leslie, I do want to say on Lifelong's behalf that at the end of the process, they came into this meeting, to our meetings, and said to us, please don't make your decision on us as the linchpin. We are reexamining what we're doing. I'm trying to think of the name of the chair of the board that came in and spoke to us about that. And you were disagreeing that they did that?
I am disagreeing that was as emphatic as you're saying it is. I am definitely disagreeing, Mike. So that's just my opinion, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you. We'll disagree then. Martha?
It's my recollection that we said we wanted Lifelong to be accommodated in some way. I don't think we specified how. That's number one. My house has three bedrooms in it. There aren't any students living in my house. So I don't know what you're talking about, Carol. Just because something goes to three bedrooms doesn't mean you're going to have fraternity parties. It's not student housing because there are three bedrooms in it. And the phrase, we picked you because, doesn't sound like, gee, we'd really like it to have this number of bedrooms versus that. Can you adjust it and still meet the city's requirements? It sounds like we're going to undo the selection of you as the developer. Now, if people have an argument with what the city has required Graham and Frost to do, I think we have an argument with the city. Leslie, I can't believe. I think Graham in particular, and I wasn't at the meeting, but I read the article. I think Graham is just trying to please everybody. Was his plan. I don't think that they didn't want to have to redesign the whole thing to meet what the landmarks, but they're doing what they can do. So I think mistrusting or casting doubt on what the developers intended is really unjustified. I think that Lifelong.
No, you can't tell me how I feel. Do not tell me how I feel.
I'm saying I don't think it. I think they presented a plan to us. They've been trying to please the two city boards. Lifelong seems to have gone through its own process. They are going to be benefited by what's going to be in the building anyway. It sounds like they're probably going to have their cake and eat it too, if you ask me. So I think if the consequence of these changes is that they come back to us with a new design and we say, can you tweak it this way or that way? I think that's certainly a reasonable conversation. I don't know if it would go anywhere, but I think to say, now we don't think you're the developer we want anymore. I would just ask Jonathan if that would give them grounds to sue the county.
I don't hear anybody saying that.
I don't think we should ask that question, Martha.
Well, but no one is saying that either.
I'm saying the developer having gone through everything that's been required, and we aren't the Landmarks Commission, we're not the City Planning Board.
All right.
I just wonder if then what the consequence would be if we went back on that promise of a sale. I don't know, Jonathan, if that's something that would be grounds for a lawsuit.
Do you want to respond?
I don't hear anybody around the table saying
I mean, honest
not that we
is,
would sue Frost, that he would sue
let,
us.
Let Jonathan respond. You ask him a question.
I mean, the honest truth is I'm not in position to respond. I didn't go to the meeting and don't know exactly what the changes are to begin with, other than I saw the headline that there were some changes. And I don't have the agreement in front of me, which was some period of time ago, so I'm really not prepared to answer that at this point. I will say that, if I go in and out of the room a couple of times, just I told the chair this, but because of election issues, I tell him to call me if something comes up. So when I disappear, it's for that. But I really, if I could look into that if I'm asked to, but I can't give a response.
I'm going to try to bring this to a conclusion, don't want to cut everybody off, so please be brief. Rich hasn't spoken yet. Rich?
Actually, I was just saying it seems like Anna and I were not on the legislature when this came through the first time, but you can tell this was a contested issue, and there's still a lot of really strong feelings. I would like to see the resolution that was passed, and it seems like we should let this rest a little bit, this issue, and go away from it and think about it rather than just continue to cycle through, because I think we're repeating ourselves and we're speculating quite a bit.
I'm going to take Anna for the third time and then Leslin for the second.
I raised my hand back when Anna was talking.
I'm sorry, I must have missed you. Would you like to go, Carol? Go ahead.
I would love to go. Thank you. So in the report, I'm not looking to re-argue this or to change developers, okay?
No. Well, it sounded that way.
No.
But
I don't want
words Carol speak, please.
Put in my mouth. So I want to be crystal clear. At this most recent report that we heard two kinds of statements from the developers and their team. One had to do with things that are done deals, that in their way through the city planning process and their own continued development of plans, that they have in fact changed about the project. And those aren't things, those things in my opinion, are things that are within the realm of the kind of things Jim was talking about, that the things that change. The number of parking spots, the design of the building, even the footprint of the building, and their relationship with Lifelong. That's not anything we can do anything about. There were other kinds of matters that they said are still a work in progress. And that had to do with they're still tweaking the number of bedrooms in each unit, how many ones, twos, threes, and this matter of the age of the tenants. And so for those matters that they're still working on and that were things in our consideration, those are the things that I think that we need process about, because if it matters to us, we need to decide, do these things matter to us? And if they do, we need to continue to engage in dialogue and say, hey, our process involved the what we heard about the need for senior units and the compatibilities with Lifelong next door. And those are things he didn't say, these are done deals. He said, well, we're thinking about these things. And I do think it would be within our purview to go back to him and let him know we care about these things, or we don't. Maybe we don't. But if we do, I'm suggesting that we should have some way to work that through and think about it. and go back to him and work with him, because my sense is he is a developer who wants to work with us and who's still out there working with us. So I want to be very crystal clear that I am not out here just criticizing Frost.
All right, let's go on. Carol, that was your third chance.
I do hope that we'll look at it that way.
And then Anna's going to complete it, and we're done with this discussion. We're going to take our break. Leslie?
Chair, I appreciate that. I just want to make sure that it is clear that my thoughts and how I felt right now has really nothing to do with the developer and design changes or anything. I actually am really concerned about having not heard from Lifelong, because they were such a key factor in all of this. So let me just put it out there real clearly so that no one thinks I have anything against Graham or anybody else or anybody else. I just want to make sure that's clear.
Thank you. Anna, briefly, please.
Yep. I just wanted to add, although obviously I was not on the legislature at the time, as all of you know, I was extremely actively engaged in this process. So this is something that I do feel very involved in. And I want to say I think that it's important for us to be very careful about sort of blaming the city for the process that's happening. I think the developers certainly are trying to meet what's being requested of them. But I do recall the city ILPC and the planning boards being very clear about what they would be looking for, as well as Common Council, the concerns that they had about the project that was being presented. So I really don't think that what is happening at the city level should be any surprise, given that it is following the exact things that they said that they would be looking at and that they were concerned about before we made our decision as the legislature. So.
All right. Thank you. We're going to take 10 minutes now, and we'll come back with the rest of the reports.